Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
And on this beautiful day, nice to be with you wherever you may be. We're coming to you from the nation's capital, or thereabouts, actually across in Arlington. I'm Paul Barry, your host, and I've got a delightful program for you today. So sit back and relax, because I think we're going to touch on a couple of things that are of interest to you. First, most of us have kids. Do you worry about giving your kids too much? Or are you one of those parents that says, you know, I don't want my kids, I want them to have more than I ever had, and I'm going to do everything I can, and so on and so on. And if you're saying that, the question is that healthy? We've got just the person that you want to hear from, and his name is Richard Watts. He's the author of the new book called Entitlemania. This is right on time. Thank you, Richard. He'll be here in just a second to talk to you. And my second guest is going to talk about that other thing that I absolutely hate, and that is overdraft fees. Whoever said that you had to pay $38.50 because you wrote a check you didn't have, you're a little short on the account. I found out last year in 2016, folks, and I'm the person to talk about it, that I wrote my overdraft fees for the year. Hold on now. My old overdraft fees for the year was $2,000. $2,000. And we made the changes, as we should have done even before. But anyway, we'll talk about that with Ken Tooman, who's with DepositAccounts.com. But right now I want to turn my attention to, and your attention, to Richard Watts. I know we all want to take care of our kids, but are we simply doing too much? And Richard says, for everything you give your child, you take something away. And he's got a lot of different points here, and we're very pleased to have him on the show. He comes to us from California. Nice to have you on the program, Richard.
Thank you, Paul. Pleasure to be here.
We're all making this mistake, or most of us are making the mistake, I think, because we mean well, but we're not doing well. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, Paul, entitlemania is incredibly counterintuitive, because it's one of those things that you think you're doing one thing and you think you're going on the appropriate road, and it takes a long time for you to recognize that you're really on the wrong freeway headed for the wrong city. and a lot of times we get pretty far down the road before we recognize that we've entitled our children like this.
Is there really more entitlement in this generation than existed in the past?
Well, generations, I think mom and dad were pretty much planted in the idea that they came first and that their lives mattered and kids were something to take care of themselves pretty much. But entitlemania is this epidemic now that's come to us because parents with the best of intentions have begun to focus on their kids solely, and in that that desire to love them, they've forgotten that there is a separation between being a child's friend and being a child's parent.
Which is so important, I think. We have three children. They're all grown. And one of the first things we noticed is how easy it is to fall into the trap of thinking of yourself as their friend. Obviously, you had them, you love them, but you can't be their friends, can you, all the time? You've got to be a parent.
Well, and I think that it's really important to say that out loud. I think that in entitlemania, it talks about the first section is all about checking yourself and recognizing yourself first, because as you know, that in many circumstances, it's how your attitude takes on a circumstance that becomes important. And entitlemania is one of these, that same type of thing, where you really just have to look at yourself first, and you have to recognize that this is my fault. This is something I need to change first before I can turn to my children and expect them to understand what's going on.
But Richard, and we're talking with Richard Watt, author of the book Entitlemania, what's wrong with saving my kids from the struggle that I went through? Why is that a mistake?
Because, as Entitlemania says, there are the pride that you have in your life, the place you want to get, the place we want to get our kids, the home run for us is to get to a place where they have personal pride. And you got a lot of your pride. You didn't get your pride just from your successes. Mm-hmm. We didn't get our pride just from our successes. We got our pride from our failures. We got our pride from our struggles, the times that we look back in contrast and we remember when you couldn't pay the bills, and your overdraft fees were so much you couldn't afford to pay your overdraft fees. And then we we got better. And as you get better, it gives you the opportunity to get up in the morning and once in a while say, you know, I've done pretty good. And if you take those struggles away from your kids, as it talks about in the book, What Not to Do, when you take those struggles away from your kids, you really rob them of the ability to feel that contrast where they say, you know, that was a tough time. I survived it. And I also got some tools out of that survival that when the problems get a little bigger, when I get a little older, I'm going to have that confidence that I can do it.
So you have nothing, if you don't, they need to have something to compare their successes to and against. I'm successful now, which is so different from when I wasn't before. And if they don't have that, they really have nothing to compare it to.
Right. And don't you think that so much of our pride, really, and our happiness, that word happiness that's pretty elusive, really comes from the contrast of where we were and where we are, and, and oftentimes being able to just say, you know, I'm okay with where I am. That makes you feel good. And if you don't know where you've been, then how in the world can you be happy with where you are?
And it makes such a perfect sense. The question, however, that is a little bit more difficult is, why can't I be my kid's best friend?
Because as a parent, what happens is that you have superior knowledge. A best friend, if you really were there to help them with unconditional love, a parent will give the kids hard things to do. They will say to them out loud, the things I'm going to do for you and the things I'm going to make you do when you're younger are not going to please you. And you're not going to understand them, and you're going to not like me because of that. And someday, as Entitled Mania talks about this, you will appreciate who I have been to you. And frankly, I don't care about your friendship. When you're a friend, Paul.
Hold on to that, because I think I want you to go into that a little bit. Let me take the break. The book is called Entitled Mania, the author, Richard Walk. When we come back, he's going to explain, guys, it's so important. Love your kid, but you can't be his best friend or her best friend. We'll be right back.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry.
The book is called Entitled Mania. The author, Richard Watt, is on the line with me. And the thing about this book, folks, which you can find in all this, Richard, where you can get the book, is that it answers the questions with no nonsense. You know, I'd like to be a friend with my kid. I really do want to be. But your kid is smart enough to understand the weaknesses of that relationship. And, Richard, they will exploit it if you let them, won't they?
Because what they see is they see that they have a lever on you that you ultimately don't want to do anything to disappoint them.
Mm-hmm.
And parents are all about, unfortunately, disappointing their kids when they go contrary to what the kids believe they should have or what they should do. Parents oftentimes have to lead you on a different path and have to be critical. And a friend doesn't do that. A friend always says, hey, everything's okay, and I want to be your best friend. And so they can play that back and forth. And frankly, you give them the power when that happens, and it's all done with the best of intentions. We all love our kids, and so we don't realize we're going down that path. But the more important thing, Paul, is that I have found in many, many instances that the friendship that returns later on down the road that you and I used to hear about is a friendship of respect for our parents when they recognize at 20 and 22 and 25 how hard it was for us to maintain a course for their benefit, even though it was contrary to what they wanted to do. That friendship returns, as opposed to the best friendship oftentimes disintegrates, because when the kid gets to a certain age and they look back at mom and dad, they often say, you know, mom and dad, you do nothing but criticize me because I never did it the way you thought it should have been done, and I've disappointed you, and now I'm disappointed in you as a parent. And I watch that fracture occur oftentimes. So, again, very counterintuitive.
The other thing point that you make, which I think is so important, is you suggest that we give our kids memories instead of things. Explain that.
There's a whole chapter in Entitled Mania about that, and that's something I have a very big heart for, and that is the idea that it's really important to invest in memories, to actually look forward and say, when I get to be 10 years from now and my kids are now instead of 2 or 12 or instead of 12 or 22, what is it that I want to look back on and I want to have as a memory? And so you invest in these ideas of, well, we want to do this vacation, we want to do something, we want to create things that are memories rather than and experiences rather than handing them things, because things wear out, memories are forever. And so those experiences over things become a very important thing and a very important tool for a parent.
And, you know, as a parent, I do, I hear you, and I want them to have what I didn't have. So is it always wrong to give in to the kid, or are there times when it's okay to do that without harming the relationship that you want to have with your child?
Well, it would sound awfully hard, wouldn't it, if I just said never, never, never. And I don't think we're capable of never, never, never. But in using the very words that you just said, Paul, we want to give them everything that we didn't have. But the interesting thing is, in giving our kids everything that we didn't have, as my friend Bob Woodson there in Washington says, we forget to give our kids what we did have.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did have was, we did have struggle. We did have failures. You know, we parents do, my goodness, don't talk about the failures with our kids. We don't want to let them know that there's actually failures out there. We want them to feel success. We want them to have a participation trophy. We only want the good stuff. But the things you and I had, that many of us had, were these incredible struggles, and those should be talked about. We need to give them those things as well.
Everything that you say makes so much sense, and I think once you kind of lay it out there, you begin to understand the importance. I'm presuming that you're a parent?
Yes, I've got 3 boys.
All grown?
Yep. Yeah.
They like you?
Yeah. You know, it's been, in Title Mania, the first chapter is my confession. So
that
really, we fired once perfectly, and it was hard with the third one.
I hear you. When we come back, we'll talk more with Richard Watt, author of Entitled Mania. He'll tell us also where you can find his book. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, on the Radio America Network. You're listening to Home and Family Finance on the Radio America Network. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we are pleased to have you with us as we remind you of all the things that you either have forgotten or didn't learn when it comes to financial literacy. Now, in this case, when it comes to raising your kids. And I hope that for those of you who are in the midst of this, this is helpful. And for those of you who have already raised your kids, I'm sorry. Oh, I know you've done a great job. The kids are out there living a good life. Richard Watt is the author of the book called Entitled Mania. And you talk about, and this was, I really find interesting, Richard. You say, don't sentence your children to the family business. What are you talking about? I worked really hard, got the business up and running. Who better to take over this business than my kids? And I want them to know that they're supposed to do it and they'd better be there for it.
Yeah, the chapter on that is controversial. But I have been in the midst for 35 years of hundreds of family businesses that I've watched them and studied others. And what happens oftentimes is the family business is very, very small and just enough for somebody to eke out a living. That's usually not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But when the family business that we're talking about grows and gets bigger and there's siblings arguing about who's going to get what position and what they're going to do, and then dad or mom tend to get older and they hang on to that ownership like a badge, and the kids really want to start out in their 30s and 40s and take control, but dad's now 70 and 80 and doesn't want to let go.
Resentments.
And all of a sudden there's this thing going on that you got that love versus, well, we're in business together, but we love each other. And one of my closest friends just last year said to me, he says, my father, who I love dearly at 82, has put me in the unenviable position of hoping he dies.
Wow.
Just because he's a great guy and the dad's a great guy, but there's just been so much. And it doesn't really give kids and grown adults the chance to really grow and become themselves. They get kind of cornered in this world of being coddled by mom and dad all the way through their lives.
And what about this issue with my children, 2, 3, 1, or whatever? And I'll tell you what I'm going to give you. It can become a lever that the kids resent, can't it?
Yes, and in Title Mania, we talk about one of the not-to-dos, and this is really the part of the principle that you can fix this at all ages. And Title Mania is something that can be fixed, and the book talks about how to do that, is that when you're really sure your estate plans and you start to use that as, well, this is what I'm thinking of doing, it's kind of a pride thing with mom and dad, but it gives oftentimes kids an unhealthy interest in your financial well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And as you get older, they begin to feel that they should take over the checkbook, maybe prematurely. And you'll also find one sibling, when they find out that there's money there and what mom and dad are planning to do, you'll find one sibling will start to cozy up to mom and dad. And first thing you know, you're wondering what they're doing. And then when the will is read, you find out that they got the house instead of the rest of the kids. So be careful.
You've got to be careful. There's so many different ways that you can screw this up, folks. But there are so many ways that you can get it right. And that's the purpose of the book, Entitled Mania, written by Richard Watt. Which is Richard, where is your book available?
It's everywhere, Amazon.com. You can follow me at Twitter at Rich Watts, or find me on Facebook.
And I love that. And I'll end with this as we talk about it. How little, not how much we should leave them or we can give them, but how little. You say it's better to really let them know how little you can leave them.
Yes, money leaving kids never made kids happier, at least not for very long. And I always ask people, try this experiment. Says this in time, you sit down with your kids some evening and say, everybody, we've decided to leave our money to charity. What do you think? And if your kids come back and say, good for you, mom and dad, you probably did it right. If they come back and talk about committing you to an early retirement in some sort of a center somewhere, you know you might have missed.
Yeah. And it's important to talk to your kids and explain, I think, why you do what you do. Don't always leave it up for them to figure it out. Sometimes you gotta take them down the path and say, look, here's why I'm doing what I'm doing. They may not like it. They may even resent it and think you're wrong, but at least they know what your plan is.
And I think you need to do that at every age of child.
Yeah. All right. So you had two boys?
I had three boys.
Oh, three boys.
Yeah.
All grown now?
All grown, yes.
Yeah. I have three, boy, girl, boy, And the reason I share that with my audience is that we're not folks talking about something we don't know. This is something that we've been through, both of us. And so trust in people that have been there to give you the right advice. And, Richard, your advice is phenomenal. Again, the book is entitled Entitled Mania. It can be found at the Better Bookstores anywhere you are. And is this your first book?
No. The first book was Fables of Fortune, What Rich People Have That You Don't Want.
Okay. What's the name of that? Fables of Fortune?
Yeah, What Rich People Have That You Don't Want.
Fascinating. You're fascinating. Thank you for joining me, Richard. Come back again, would you?
My pleasure, Paul.
Okay. Coming up next, folks, how much are you paying in overdraft fees? I know how much I'm paying, and it ain't good. We'll be right back with more.
You be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
You know, there's so much that I want to help you with on this program. That's what it's designed to do. It's all about financial literacy, and it's all about giving you information that's going to make your financial world a better world or more productive one, and that you are, in fact, an educated consumer. You know what I mean by saying being financially fit, right? We say it every week, and again, very quickly, I'm going to say it to you now, and that's simply that you need to save more than you spend. I'm not going to take a long time today. Save more than you spend. Put aside 5% every week, every day of all that you make. Make sure 5% of that goes into a bank, goes into a savings account, goes to somewhere where you have it, and then make sure you have an emergency fund where you are saving 6 months of your expenses in case something happens. And then you also have a fund that allows you to help the family fund, if you would. People call you and ask for help. You don't want to say no, but you don't want to deal into your emergency fund, and you just don't want to do it. Okay? Let's just leave that there on the table and always work from that perspective. Now, a perspective that I work from, and I'm not doing very well, is that I have a bank like most of us. I use the bank like most of us. And on occasion, I overdraft like most of us. And one of the reasons I think I'm overdrafting at the level that I am is that I just don't understand how this works. I mean, I understand that they charge me if I spend too much money, but I thought I had an account that was attached to a savings or something. At any rate, let me just tell you that in 2016, folks, my overdraft fees at the bank for the year was $2,100 and some cents. $2,000 is what the bank charged me. Me. Now, listen to this. This is stunning when you hear it. The numbers are fantastic in terms of the amount of money that the banks are making in overdraft fees. More than $33.3 billion, that's with a B, in revenue for banks and financial firms, the highest level since 2009, according to a research company. $33 billion is what all of us paid the banks because of overdraft. It's unbelievable. You can't even imagine. Let's talk about that for a minute. And I've got the person to talk to about that because he certainly knows. He's been in the business for a long time. And he's here to join us. Ken Tooman is the founding editor of the Bank Deals blog or depositaccounts.com, where he has been covering bank deals and deposit investment strategies since 2005. His insights are gleaned from Deposit Accounts' patented rate tracking technology and its community of fervent savers, along with Ken's own decades of experience in investing in bank-offered savings products. That's the PR. Ken, tell me the truth. What do you do?
We find the best rates, and we find the lowest accounts that give you the lowest fees. And one of the fees that you got to watch out for is the overdraft fees.
That's for sure. Depositaccounts.com is this firm and this company, and you can reach them by making contact. So if you hear something here today that you want to know more about, by all means, reach out to Ken, T-U-M-I-N, of depositaccounts.com. We're pleased to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us, Ken. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. What am I doing wrong? I mean, yeah, I know that I'm overdrafting, okay? And I've stopped it, by the way. We had this deal where both Amy and I play out of the same account. When I say play, we write checks out of the same account. I have to keep the balance. She doesn't. She just writes a check. And so we stopped, Ken. We just had to stop doing this. Because it was unbelievable. Am I way over the top, or am I? Is that a normal amount? What's going on?
Well, unfortunately, overdraft fees are common, and it's easy to be hit with them. A lot of people are hit with them, as the statistic that you gave about how much banks are making from overdraft fees. It is pretty amazing, but there are some steps you can take to make sure you're not hit with the overdraft fees.
Okay. Don't say yes or opt in for overdraft protection when asked, or opt out if you've already enrolled. I said yes because I thought if I opted in, if I was over, you know, if I took more money out of my account than I had in it, that I'd be protected.
Yeah.
Doesn't work that way.
The banks make it complicated, and unfortunately that complication costs us money, or that extra complexity. In general, you want to opt out for overdraft protection because when you use your debit card, if you don't have enough in your checking account to cover that purchase, you want that purchase to be declined. You don't want to go forward with that purchase and then be charged with a overdraft fee that can be as much as $35. So if you opt out of the overdraft protection and you don't have enough in your checking account when you go to use your debit card, and you don't have enough in there, the purchase will be declined and you won't be hit with a fee.
Okay, so it's better to be embarrassed. It's better to be embarrassed at the point of purchase than it is to be poor because the bank is charging you. Okay, and you say opt out if you've already enrolled. So it's okay to go to the bank and say, okay, I want out of this.
Yep.
Okay.
Definitely is.
Let me ask you this question. How did they get to $38 or $35 for a late fee?
Or you're talking about overdraft fee?
Yeah, for an overdraft fee. I'm sorry. How did we get to $38? I bought a $3 latte, and nobody said anything except that when I got my statement, that $3 latte cost me $38.
Yep.
How is that possible?
Yeah, that's some banks, a lot of banks, are making a killing off of these overdraft fees. It's definitely, in those kind of cases, the overdraft fees have been going up throughout the years, and they continue to go up. And in a lot of cases, like this case, it can be a really bad deal for the consumer.
Right. Who sets the fee at 30? Is that by federal law? Is that, I mean, how do they get to 35 or 38 bucks?
It's up to the banks. The banks can set the fee. If you go through the fine print of the disclosure, account disclosure, you probably see that there somewhere buried in the fine print.
Yeah, okay.
It's easy to bury, so it's easy for consumers not to really look at that when they're deciding on accounts. So it's easy for banks to keep raising that without worrying about driving away customers.
I guess what I'm asking you another way, does it really cost the bank $35 if I overdraw my account?
Nope. It costs them a whole lot less than that, and they definitely take advantage of it.
Wow. You heard that, folks. That's not what it really costs the bank. That's what they decide to charge you. When we come back, we'll ask Ken, does it make sense to shop banks based on what their overdraft fees are, or does it make sense for you just simply to opt out and not use overdraft at all and pay the price? This is Home and Family Finance. I know you overdrawn your account. I know you've done it. Here's a way to kind of save you some money. We'll be right back.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
You know, and look, I'm not throwing out a number to hype the show. I'm telling you, folks. In 2016, my overdraft fees at my bank was $2,100. That is just absolutely ridiculous, and I didn't realize it. I mean, I knew we were paying, but I had no idea until I looked at the statement. And by the way, the statements will tell you, if you peruse them, you will see what you're paying in overdraft fees. So does it make sense to shop for the better fee or just simply not opt into this arrangement? And that's what we're asking now, consumer banking expert Ken Tooman. How do I do that, Ken?
Well, one thing that you can shop for now that is becoming more popular is what's called overdraft transfers. And more banks are coming out with free overdraft transfer service. And what that does, you basically link a savings account to your checking account. And if your checking account goes under because of a purchase, the bank will transfer enough from the savings account to the checking account, and that's called an overdraft transfer. In the past, a lot of banks have charged for that, just like an overdraft fee, but more and more banks now are offering that service for free. So if a transfer kicks in from the savings to the checking, it's free, and that is a much preferable service than the old overdraft fees that occur when you, in this case, you'll cover it with some of your savings account. So the main thing would have a cushion in your savings account to make sure that anything like that would be taken care of.
So you're saying you need to shop technology and the tools that your bank offers to see what can help you.
Right. So that's another thing. In addition to this overdraft transfer, free overdraft transfers, also look for banks that have things like automatic alerts that you can set up. So if your balance, either your savings or your checking account, goes down to a certain level or a certain debit occurs, you can have the bank text you an alert to let you know where your balance is and to make sure that you're not falling too low on your balance.
Okay. All right. So the alerts are there. Also, a cushion, the smart thing, I guess, is to leave a cushion in your account for bills, and that can be your safety net, right?
Yep, that can be your safety net. And then you need to have the alert as a backup. So if that cushion gets too low, you have that alert kicks in to let you know about it.
Ken, we're talking with Ken Tooman, by the way, folks, who is an expert in banking. And his company is depositaccounts.com, should you want to find out more information. He has the answers to it. What is the most, I guess we're all doing this overdraft thing, which is very favorable to the bank. So they're happy. I mean, I presume that they're happy when you overdraft, you know, because, especially if they're getting $38 a whop.
Yep. They make a lot of money that way, and they do a lot of things to encourage that overdraft. So it's important to make sure you use all the things in your favor to try to avoid them.
It's a part of human nature, I suspect. And maybe that's not true, and maybe I'm giving too much to us as consumers. But we're gonna from time to time overspend.
Yep.
Are there banks that don't charge you overdraft fees?
Well, I mean, if you don't have that linkage between a savings account and a checking account set up, all banks will charge you if you go below, below zero on your checking account. Because basically, in that case, the bank is making a loan to you to pay if it actually does pay off a purchase that goes under. There's one bank that actually what will do won't charge a fee for actually when you overdraft, but only will charge you interest on the amount of that little loan that takes place when your account goes below zero. That and that comes out to be a lot less than an actual fee.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is what I was going to ask you, Ken. Does it make sense then to shop for that? That you're going to be charged interest rather than the 38 or 35 standard charge,
right?
Because it's not going to be nearly as much. What is the incentive to the bank to do it that way?
Well, it's for banks that like to advertise that they're very fee friendly. Those few online banks that are big in that advertising their friendliness regarding fees. Those banks will tend to be pretty good on terms of overdrafts and have ways that'll be easy on consumers.
And let's get back for a moment to this transfer business. You know, let's say you got thousands of dollars in your savings account and you do it on a regular basis. Is there a limit to how many times they will allow you to make that transfer or do the transfer?
That's a good point. All savings accounts have limitation on how many withdrawals per month can be made. It's six for most types of withdrawals per month.
Okay.
So if you do that too many times, then you'll be hit with a fee on your savings account. So that is also, so you don't want to get in the habit of doing overdraft, even with that transfer feature.
All right, when we come back, I'm talking with Ken Toobin. Folks, this is stuff that you need to know and you don't know who to ask. I'm asking for you. When we come back, we're going to ask Ken, can banks survive without these fees? In other words, do they have to have this in order to serve you? This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network. Listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host here on the Radio America Network. We thank you so much for joining us as we take every possible effort that we can to educate you and to help you to get through your financial day in a way that's significant and beneficial to you. My guest is Ken Toobin of DepositAccounts.com. We're talking about those pesky overdraft fees. Last year, the bank made $33 billion. Didn't make it, took it out of our accounts, because we were too silly to make sure that we had balances. And you know, we opt into this program where if you send up a charge on your debit and you don't have the money, they pay it, but they charge you $30 to $35. And by the way, those fees are arbitrary. And Ken, you're right, it doesn't cost the bank nearly that amount, does it?
They're making a fortune off of these overdraft fees.
Can a bank today survive, exist, without these kinds of fees? Do they have to have it to stay in business?
They don't need them. And several banks, especially some online banks, are very fee-friendly and don't have these outrageous overdraft fees.
Okay. So you can go online, like Ally, I think, is one of those online banks, and I've seen that. What about credit unions? How do they rate in this business of overdraft charges?
Well, they also have overdraft fees, and they tend to be, in general, a little better than the banks. But they also have similar fees in terms of overdrafts.
I guess I'm getting down to, why do they charge this? Because they can? If they don't need it, if they don't, I mean, it's they're in the business of making a profit for their shareholders. I get that. So this is a way that they can do that. No?
Well, I guess they look at it also in terms of what, how much exposure or how much bad publicity the fee gives them. In terms of overdraft, not all of the customers are hit with that. So often the customers that are hit with that might not be the ones that are the most, the ones that shop around the most.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they're the ones that might just kind of grin and bear it and just live with it. So I think it's a type of fee that banks can kind of get away with, in other words.
Can you threaten the bank successfully that if you don't, if you charge me overdraft fees, I'm leaving? I mean, like, obviously you can leave.
It's worthwhile to shop around to if you have a bank that's very bad on overdraft fees, it's time to switch banks or switch to a credit union too is another option.
You said also ask your bank when deposits are credited to your account and when transactions are subtracted. What are we supposed to do with this?
Well, another trick that a lot of banks have done is where they will reorder your transactions, your debits, so that at the end of the day, you'll end up with more overdraft fees because of how the transactions are ordered. So you want a bank that won't play that game.
Ah, okay. How do I know they're playing that game?
Well, that'll be, you got to read their disclosures to see if they do that kind of reordering in which the how they subtract debits. And you want to make sure they don't reorder those transactions so it'll cost you more money.
Okay, and by reordering, you mean what? They charge you, they wait till you don't have any money to charge their fees? I don't understand.
Well, like, for instance, what they'll do, they'll take the highest purchase that you made and make that first. So after your first purchase might cause you to be negative, and then every purchase after that, then you'll be hit with an overdraft fee. If they kept the original order, that if that highest amount was later,
you might not get
hit with the overdraft until later. So
you
might have fewer overdrafts.
Yeah, you might end up with just two overdrafts as opposed to six. Okay, and they do that?
Yep, they've been doing that quite a while. So you want to avoid banks or credit unions that does that kind of game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I tell you, for $33 billion, that's a hell of an incentive, don't you think? You know, to do a lot of different things. $33 billion. Ken, thank you so much for coming in. Can folks reach out to you if they need more information?
Yep.
Okay.
Depositaccounts.com.
Depositaccounts.com. Folks, the lesson here is figure this out. Learn how your bank operates. And don't be a patsy for fees. You know, you can do better. You can do better. Thanks so much for joining us, Ken. Come back and see us again soon, would you please?
Oh,
absolutely. And thank you, folks, for joining us and tuning in. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Al Peterson, like you a lot. Thank you. We'll see you later. Bye.